I have to get this right because I'm prone to wandering sometimes, and I get away from the microphone and people later on ask me, that was sounding really interesting, and then I don't know where you went in the room, so. How many people here this morning lean toward metempsychosis? Metempsychosis. Come on, guys. You knew everything else this morning on me, right? But you didn't get this one. You do? What is it?
Reincarnation.
That's exactly right. Reincarnation, transmigration of the soul, that business. How many people here right now are kind of leaning in that direction?
I believe in reincarnation.
Okay, okay, okay. A little more, one more time. I just need to know where I am. Okay, okay. A lot of scientists in the room. Great. Well, we're figuring it out as we go along. During this past year, I've had some opportunities to share some end days with a few friends. And yes, one of them was in fact a Quaker. That's a Quaker joke about friends. So I have at least a few ideas of how we even become during those times, what it's like for us. I realize it must be hard for you to actually follow our conversations together. I mean, my conversations with you. They take these long leaps, month at a pop. And every once in a while, someone can actually track it that long. But I'm going to try today to tie some of the things we've been talking about between January and now. Good luck, right? Okay. I think that today would be a really good day to do that. A recap can be a blessing on a day of our great meeting. So let's get back to it and take a look at it. And I think we should, as we enter this, have both a sense of history and future as we stay firmly rooted in the present. I hope that we can be useful to each other today in a beyond normal way, in a way that we can create a new and greater normal. And to do that, we're going to have to also be able to let go. So you wonder what that whole time for all ages was about? It was just a little primer on how we can actually disagree well, because that can come up. Even the greatest control freaks among us want something that's hard to admit. We all want something beyond our imagination. We want to know that there's more. And yet, generally, this waking conscious mind cannot alone give that to us, because if it could, we'd have it every day. Yet something big, something out of the ordinary, something we hadn't imagined to date, will happen. Why do I say that? You know why I say that. We're right at the verge of something, and it could break left or right. Looks a little bit grim in some ways. By the way, that's true for this microcosm community as well as that macrocosm community out there. Anybody here, you've heard of the climate crisis, right? Yeah, I know you have, because not that many people in the room raised their hand over the reincarnation. So I know you're science-minded, rational, materialist people. And as I've said before here, climate crisis is apocalypse for rational people. Now, this is, to me, a telling thing. I'm told that, how do I say this? Some people say I'm a little out there, and what they mean is that I have some people are farsighted, some people are nearsighted. Well, I'm very, very farsighted. That's my affliction, okay? But this is a good thing because, you know, then I can get together with people who they're not really checked in at that level, and we can have a conversation and actually begin to see some new things. So when I say, for example, we're all kind of facing a moment of challenge, a moment of crisis. I don't think this is a bad thing. I've watched people for a long time. I've been a therapist for a long time. And what I can tell you is that's when people do something completely out of the box, something that they wouldn't have done yesterday, is when the back's against the wall. So I told you we would recap, so we're going to recap. Our conversation to date, in I believe it was January, it might have been early February, we went to Selma. Remember that? We went to Selma. We marched with one of the most eclectic, what's the word for it, the religious word for that? Ecumenical, thank you. One of the most ecumenical events in modern times, maybe ever. In fact, I think we can safely say within recorded human history, right? And arguably, it was one of the most important confrontations between a very homogenous culture and those who were, and in fact, the ecumenical group that was walking was a very heterogeneous culture, right? And we looked at that and we talked about what was the Unitarian Universalist, the Unitarian and the Universalist, because just about that time and just before that time, it wasn't Unitarian Universalist. It was Universalists and Unitarians. And, I mean, that's really getting, homogeneous. That's really, it isn't even Unitarians and Universalists, because they were still separate at that time. And a culture that, frankly, did not want to, that were xenophobes, we could say. They really did not want to mix it up with anybody who was not like them. It was a tremendous clash between those two points of view. Now, interestingly enough, we, as Universalists, Unitarians, came out of that realizing that whereas we strongly supported, ideologically, heterogeneous cultures, that means cultures of people of different makes and models, but that, in fact, we're pretty much a homogeneous group of people. And to some extent, that kind of remains true to this day. The fellowship itself is maybe not quite even as eclectic and diverse as some of the other coastal urban Unitarian Universalist societies. Certainly, though, more so than a lot of the Unitarian Universalist societies that you might find in the middle of the country. Not in the big cities, necessarily, though. There you still get a bit of a mix. And we actually, one of the things we talked about is we talked about it's a lot easier to be a culture of like people. It's very difficult to be a group of people that's all hodgepodgey and mixed up. I mean, take it for example, if people speak a different language, does it make it easier? And then, by the way, you can call them a lot of names because they're not that clear on what you're saying about them until they get to your border and then you show them. The country right now is going through that whole kind of a change, right? We're trying to find out where we stand. And we're coming from a funny base because, like I said, we're a pretty homogeneous group of people. And that goes not only for, I mean, there are ways in which we're not, right? But there are a lot of ways in which we are. And some of the ways in which we're not, in other words, in ways in which we are heterogeneous, I should say, it's good in the face of the world, because if we can't really kind of soften it up and let people begin to meet each other and they just go by the stories that they have about each other, and then we talked earlier this morning about how hard it is to confront and change those stories, because everything in us is designed to not do that. See, the reason we're not a super diverse denomination is not because we don't want to be. It's because something in us finds that difficult. And that's true. A lot of those ways, I think, don't matter to us directly. I don't think it matters to us, for example, how many, what group were we talking about before? Norwegians there are here, or how many people, Albanians or Chinese people here. It doesn't really matter that much. It doesn't change. This would be nice. It would maybe help us understand something about the world a little better, but it wouldn't make a direct difference to us. But what I have said before is, remember from the conversation that Joanna and I just had, one of the areas where we find we're defended is the generation gap. It still exists. It existed when I was a kid. It existed when I first met artists, which was in 68. And it exists to this day. And it's complicated. But a tribe or society that doesn't have people of all ages, and particularly people who are of childbearing age or child-rearing age, isn't going to survive for very long. That's just a matter of nature. It's just a matter of, it's not a theory. Always, I still encourage you to do this. Whenever you think about your community, your small community here, think of it as a tribe. We're really literally about the size of a small tribe. A tribe can only exist between, say, 30, 40 people and maybe a couple hundred, and then it has to subdivide into smaller groups. But think of ourselves in that fashion and ask yourself, what would this look like if you were, in fact, in the outback in Australia? Would your tribe be able to survive that? And if not, what can you do to change that circumstance? Or do you want to? So when you go into an annual meeting, you need to really think about, this is something that we do in business too. Somebody who's developing a business, you look at that business and you say, where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be in 10 years? That's a critical question. And you'll find that most of the time when the people who are running or own that business don't have an answer to that question, they don't get to those points. Small businesses are actually the backbone of America, but they turn over a lot. And having done this work with small businesses, I got to tell you, a lot of it is because they can't answer those questions. Where are you going to be in 5 years, and where are you going to be in 10 years? Because they're not seeing that far. Maybe it's not necessary for them. Maybe they want to do this one now, and they don't really care where that's going. But that's what today is for. That's why we're here today. So, We know that change can happen rapidly. And I have my own theories as to why this one that we talked about this morning actually occurred in that way. But we'll give it a little more time and see what comes up with that. But I think it's because all of that difference was embedded in families all the way across America. And you don't have a tremendous amount of economic disparity or racial disparity embedded in families. So that the person that you reject, see, I think the person that was being rejected was a family member that people, that was blood member that they had grown up with their whole lives. And it was became a question of, do we exorcise this person? Or do we exorcise the idea? And the harder of the two, by these numbers that we talked about this morning, the harder of the two was to put the person out. Because very often, not always, but a great deal of the time, people love that member in their family. And it may sound trite, but this is an example of love conquers all. This is it in numbers. Currently, I think we all can feel this. America right now is as close as it's been to a civil war since the Civil War. I don't think that has to happen. The thing that I've said in the past about the best I can come up with to deal with it is to actually communicate. And to communicate in a way that our current society is not well set up to do. When you turn on the news, you get to see the news you want to see. Everybody sees different news depending on what their amygdala is aligned with. That wasn't so when I was young. That is what's happening now. You do not have to hear news you don't want to hear. You can hear news that makes you feel like fighting. I have people close to me who do. But it's very hard to actually reach somebody who's watching that other news. You may think you know that person's perspective, but I can pretty much guarantee you that you don't. Almost every month, I come up with a list of podcasts that I think would be mind-changing to listen to, and I put it out there, and every once in a while I get a ping back on it. Did anybody catch The Last Communicator? Anybody read The Last Communicator? I got very little feedback on it, but one of the questions I asked is, I said, is anybody reading this column I've been writing for the past few months? And if so, just send me an email. Here's my email address, or text me, here's my text address. I mean, I'll take it 24/7. That's not true. Actually, my phone goes off at 9 o'clock and you can't reach me until the next morning, but I will get it. I think I got back one answer on that. So I got to tell you, my inclination is not to do that column anymore. But it's got some pretty interesting things in it. Things that I can't bore you with in this room. But I think communication, you either communicate or you go to war. I've said this. And remember, you heard it here first. You communicate or you go to war. Find somebody. Find somebody that you can talk to who does not watch the same news you watch. You don't have to go all the way to, what's that guy, Breitbart? You don't have to do that. But find somebody who maybe does watch Fox News. Find somebody who watches different news than you do and listen to them. I don't want you to try and convince them of anything. You know what happens if they try to convince you of anything. Doesn't go well. But the key, the first key, the one that opens the door to communication and an opportunity at peace is listening. They will tell you something that you don't otherwise know. I promise you, if you just hang in there long enough, and you'll go, and you'll go, I never got that about this other person. So, one advertisement for my podcast recommendations. There's a really good one on Hidden Brain, and it's called Voting with the Middle Finger. Now, that sounds intriguing, doesn't it? It's really good. Okay. Today, when we go into the meeting, find a way to talk and listen to, but communicate with, somebody in this room that you don't agree with.